Good morning, all. The first case presented for argument is Zumdar versus Wellness. Mr. Cerletti.
Good morning. May it please the court, plaintiffs believe their position in these consolidated appeals is clearly and completely set out in the briefs before the court. That said, however, there are three main points I'd like to address today. First, the dismissal of the plaintiff's claims based on the forum selection clause contained in the contracts and the district court's failure to address the venue provision contained in the defendant's rules and regulations. Second, our position that Wellness is an illegal pyramid scheme in violation of Illinois law. And finally, the application of Circuit Rule 36 to the claims of the Sharif and Torres plaintiffs. The courts below held that the forum selection clause contained in the contracts was mandatory, and therefore that the only proper forum for plaintiffs' claims was Dallas, Texas. The defendants used much of their brief to argue that these provisions are mandatory, but as we stated in our opening brief, we do not disagree with this point. Instead, we argue that the courts below did not acknowledge the presence of the, quote, venue provision contained in the WIN rules and regulations. As we pointed out in our briefs, in this court and the court below, the contracts specifically incorporate the rules and regulations, and the distributor contracts signed by the Khan and Rashid plaintiffs state that in the event of a conflict between the rules and the contract, the rules govern. This venue provision is a permissive forum selection clause and is in conflict with the mandatory contractual clauses relied on by the district judges. A conflict which, under Illinois law, results in an ambiguity that must be construed against the drafters, in this case the defendants. Yet, as I've already stated, the district judges make no mention of the rules and regulations in their opinions. As this court held in the Paper Express case, to be considered mandatory, a forum selection clause must clearly express an intent that the chosen forum is both compulsory and exclusive. Under that standard, there can be no doubt that the venue provision of the rules and regulations is permissive. The defendants do not argue that the venue provision is not permissive. Instead, they argue that the provision in the rules and regulations is actually a consent to personal jurisdiction clause. But this contention is illogical, and it goes against longstanding principles of Illinois contract law, because the two provisions immediately preceding the venue provision address, quote, arbitration jurisdiction and, quote, non-arbitration jurisdiction. Now, if the venue provision is, as they say, a consent to jurisdiction clause, what meaning does it have? Is there, if the venue provision is a consent to personal jurisdiction, what is its meaning? The answer is that the clause would have no meaning under that interpretation. Then there's no need for a third consent to personal jurisdiction clause when arbitration jurisdiction and non-arbitration jurisdiction would cover all of the jurisdiction necessary. Such an interpretation is contrary to contract law, which requires that meaning must be given to each word of a contract. Notwithstanding defendant's contention, a provision entitled, quote, venue would be the most logical place for one to look for a clause concerning venue. This court said as much in the Continental Insurance case, where it said a contractual term to select specific venue is a forum selection clause. Now, to begin with, the word shall is not contained in the venue clause in the rules and regulations. Paper Express Court relied on the presence of the phrase shall be filed in holding that the forum selection clause in that case was mandatory. Several courts in the Northern District have held the same. Second, the venue provision refers only to, quote, jurisdiction. The Paper Express Court held that where a forum selection clause speaks of jurisdiction, it is to be considered permissive unless the clause contains additional language making clear the party's intent that the forum specified is the exclusive forum for any litigation. There is no such additional language in the venue provision in the rules and regulations. Indeed, the use of the phrase non-exclusive in that provision indicates an opposite intent. Judge Shader in the Riviera Finance case and Judge Kokoris in the Saxena case stated this very point. Now, the defendants are going to tell you that those cases have no relevance here because the clauses the courts were dealing with in those cases were not forum selection clauses. They were consent to personal jurisdiction clauses. That is incorrect. Both courts termed the clauses at issue forum selection clauses. The defendants seem to think that because a forum selection clause does not specifically mention venue or forum, it cannot be a forum selection clause, but that too is incorrect. As the Paper Express Court held, the fact that a forum selection clause does not use the term venue or forum and instead only uses the term jurisdiction does not magically convert the forum selection clause to a consent to personal jurisdiction clause. It merely renders the forum selection clause permissive. We argued each of these points in the courts below, but again, the district judges make no reference to the venue provision of the rules and regulations in their respective opinions. The fact is that each of the plaintiffs signed their contracts here in Illinois, in this district. They attended numerous seminars given by Ralph Oates in this district. They lost over $1.1 million because the civil and criminal law of Illinois was violated. The Northern District of Illinois is a proper forum for this case, both these cases. Turning now to the plaintiff's contention that wellness is an illegal pyramid scheme which renders its contract unenforceable. 720 ILCS section 517-7 provides that, quote, multi-level marketing operation is illegal where, quote, the opportunity to receive a benefit or thing of value is primarily based upon the inducement of additional persons to participate in the operation and is not primarily contingent on the volume or quantity of goods sold or distributed to persons for purposes of resale to consumers. In People v. Knapp, the Illinois Appellate Court held that a defendant who held his company out as a multi-level marketing plan was found guilty of operating an illegal pyramid scheme in violation of the anti-pyramid statute. Among the factors relied on by the Knapp Court in affirming the defendant's conviction were the following. The defendant's very own promotional brochure emphasized that subscribers could use the matrix to earn bonuses that would eventually recoup their membership fees as these subscribers each used word of mouth to induce three friends to join.
If your position is right, is it a case where you would have to have extensive trials or hearings on the validity of the contract itself, and only upon a finding that the contract was valid, then go to the forum selection clause and send the case to some other jurisdiction?
I don't know if we need a trial. I mean, the defendants...
Well, there's been no evidence here. I mean, you make an allegation that this is an illegal pyramid scheme, but...
Well,
how does anybody know that right now, looking at it?
Well, you can judge from the defendant's own words in the promotional videotapes. I mean,
well, you have to look at promotional videotapes, which that may or may not be part of the whole contract here. Or what? The problem here is this is supposed to be a real simple inquiry by the district court as to where is this dispute going to be resolved? Forum selection clause seems to, if it's a proper clause, seems to say Texas. And I mean, we're not hostile to those kind of clauses in our cases.
I understand.
So you go to Texas and then you fight out the validity of the contract there.
Well, that may be.
What you want to do is fight out the validity of the contract here and only go to Texas. I guess even if the contract was valid here, you would argue that the forum selection clause is invalid.
Well, that's correct, because there are two forum selection clauses, and one of them is permissive.
As you see it, there are.
As I see it. That is our position. And the fact, we've alleged allegations that this is a pyramid scheme. Now, those allegations must be taken as true at this point. We haven't produced evidence, but we've produced the defendant's own words.
Why do your allegations have to be taken as true when the issue, the first issue, is the forum selection clause?
Well,
why do we have to go beyond the forum selection clause? You don't allege that's illegal, do you?
That the forum selection clause itself is illegal? No. I don't understand the question. Our position is that you don't need to get to the forum selection clause because this is a pyramid scheme, and that it's a pyramid scheme is borne out by the defendant's own words. I mean,
so, but your position then, just to be clear, is that you have to have litigation on the contract itself, and only if that litigation which could be very extensive, ends up in favor of the defendants here, then you go to the forum selection clause and decide where to go to fight out the rest of the case.
Well, I believe that the forum selection clause in the rules and regulations makes Illinois, the Northern District, a proper venue.
No, that's your first argument.
Right.
Your second argument, if we reject that, we go to your second argument here, that's what we would have to do.
That's what you would have to do.
Does that make any sense?
Well, Your Honor, the fact is that Illinois citizens or people who sign contracts in Illinois were defrauded by an illegal pyramid scheme that has been made illegal by the legislature of Illinois. Again, the defendant's own words make that clear. They're chastised.
They don't agree that it's an illegal pyramid scheme.
Well, of course they don't agree.
What's the difference between what they do and Mary Kay Cosmetics or something?
Well, there's a big difference. You know, the defendants are going to point to the rules they have, that the Amway rules that make this a legal multi-level marketing operation, but the fact is those rules aren't enforced. And case Ninth Circuit case Webster versus Omnitrition, the defendants there said, well, we have these rules that make us a legal multi-level marketing operation, and the court said, no, you don't. You have these rules, yes, but you don't enforce them. And we've alleged that these rules are not enforced.
See, but your position is that that this is a real simple proposition to determine that this is an illegal pyramid scheme.
I don't think we need.
I don't think it is.
I don't think we need a trial to determine whether or not this is an illegal pyramid scheme. That can be decided at summary judgment.
But then you're conceding you have to go through the whole summary judgment process, depositions and marshaling your evidence and briefs and everything, and decide that issue before you go to the forum selection clause.
Your Honor, if this is indeed a pyramid scheme, then the contract is invalid, and the plaintiffs would get no justice if it was after the fact determined, well, this is a pyramid scheme, they should have been able to be here in court in the Northern District.
You can argue it's a pyramid scheme in a different forum. I mean, if this went to Texas, you could argue it's an illegal pyramid scheme.
Even if that were so...
Isn't it?
We could, yes, we could.
Yeah.
Even if that were so, the cases shouldn't have been dismissed under Section 1406. They should have been transferred. The fact that there's two conflicting forum selection clauses or venue provisions... It was not an obvious mistake to file here. The plaintiffs were well within their rights, reading the venue provision of the rules and regulations, to file that case here. It says non-exclusive jurisdiction under a clause entitled venue.
Okay.
The fact that they were dismissed without instead transferring under the interest of justice required a transfer at the very least to Texas.
Aren't there suits filed in Texas?
They are now. Just to protect the plaintiff's claims from the statute of limitations.
There are no statute of limitations problems then, right now?
No.
Okay.
You're into your rebuttal time.
I noticed. I would just like to add then, as far as the Circuit Rule 36, we've discussed this at length in our briefs, and I don't want to belabor the point. I will just touch on one matter. There was a case just decided last month. It was Klokokee versus Gonzalez, where the court applied Rule 36 because they found that the district court had not addressed the appellant's arguments.
36 is one that we can invoke at our pleasure, and it is not one for discussion or argument.
Okay. Then that's all I have at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cerulli. Mr. Hale.
May it please the court, the appellants have basically hung themselves with their own words here in argument. Let's start out with the basic undisputed propositions of law when it comes to forum selection clauses. First of all, they are prima facie valid. The U.S. Supreme Court in the Bremen case found that in a freely negotiated contract between international businesses, all the way to Carnival, in which a forum provision in a cruise ticket was held to be enforceable. With that idea in mind, a very limited attack is allowed on forum selection clauses. In Bremen, the Supreme Court noted that they should be given their full effect unless they are affected by fraud. The Supreme Court came along later on in the Shirk case and explained that this qualification does not mean that an allegation of fraud invalidates the provision. What they stated, it merely means the clause is not enforceable if inclusion of that clause in the contract was secured by fraud. Counsel stood here just a moment ago and admitted that he's not made such an allegation. He's just claiming this entire contract, this entire business that Wellness is running, is improper. He has not made the required attack, which is to show that the inclusion of the specific clause at issue was procured by fraud or some other improper contact. He's saying the whole thing is improper, therefore the whole thing should be blown up. Counsel has not then even met the minimum threshold required by the U.S. Supreme Court in numerous other cases to mount an attack on the forum selection clause based upon this illegality argument. There, a good case that applied this and talked about how they're really getting the cart before the horse was the Starlight Arlington Plastics case out of the Northern District of California, 2001, U.S. District, Lexus 7997. And it really sums up what's happening here. Finally, plaintiff argues that due to the defendant's fraudulent conduct, the entire contract should be rescinded and the forum selection clause should be found unenforceable. However, plaintiff presents no cases where a court has rescinded an entire contract for the purpose of invalidating a forum selection clause. Granting a rescission of the contract to invalidate the forum selection clause would essentially give plaintiff the relief it seeks without requiring it to prove its case.
Have you ever argued in this case, or are you ever planning on arguing in this case, that if in Texas, either in an arbitration forum or a state court or a federal court, district court in Texas, that the plaintiffs here would be precluded from arguing that the contract is void and it's an illegal pyramid scheme?
If I understand your question correctly, we have not alleged, nor we have not contended, nor do we plan on contending that they are precluded from arguing that position in the court of proper venue, which is Dallas, Texas. That issue should be addressed and must be addressed in Dallas, and there's numerous cases that talk about that.
What I mean is you're not there's nothing here to suggest that when you get to Texas, you say, oh, they can't raise this issue here. They had an opportunity to raise it.
No, absolutely not. Matter of fact, we contend that since venue is proper only in Dallas, Texas, that is the forum to contend, to make their illegality argument, and that is the only place to do so. And cases that we've cited in our briefs and Supreme Court cases and otherwise, it's improper to present this here in Illinois. And it really comes back, Your Honor, to the practical issue that you were raising just a moment ago. They've thrown out this allegation of fraud or illegality in this particular case. So what do we do? And I think you suggested, do we have to have a full trial? And counsel admitted just a moment ago, well, no, I don't think we have to go to a full trial. We have to at least go to summary judgment. Of course, if there's fact issues found, then you'd have to go to a full trial. What he would have is, anytime you had an allegation of fraud or illegality or something like that, you would have to basically conduct either a mini trial or something of similar effect on the merits. Of course, then, if it's found not to be illegal, then under their contentions, then we would have to transfer the case back and honor the forum selection clause, transfer it back down to Dallas. And so what would we have? We would have a complete waste of time of the Illinois courts, and or we would have the Illinois courts making factual and legal determinations when it was found that they didn't have the proper venue in the first place. That is why the Supreme Court came along after Brennan and stated in Shirk, you can't just allege fraud, the boogeyman of fraud or illegality, and invalidate these things. It has to go to the inclusion of that clause itself in the contract to even have a threshold attack allowed in the forum selection clause. And by their own admissions, appellants are not contending that, so that they have no proper basis to present that here in this court. They have not offered a single case in which a federal court, it's been shown that a judge has to defer his ruling on the forum selection clause until some sort of summary judgment or mini trial or full trial on the merits of the fraud or illegality argument is made. They do not have a case. They did not present it, and nor are they going to present it in rebuttal. They admit further that on the face, at least on the face of it, the rules and regulations in the briefing, they say they're innocent sounding, and counsel talks about a moment ago how they seem to follow the Amway type provisions. But if you dig deeper, you're going to find out that that's not really the case. Well, how is it that you dig deeper? You do discovery and you do a trial. And so what he's saying is, in this case, if I've thrown it out, the allegation of illegality, and I contend that if you dig deeper beyond the regulations, it really is illegal despite what it would say on the surface, then we have to have a trial here in Illinois, or at least a summary judgment, and then we bypass the forum selection clause. That is way too convenient and way too easy for someone in the appellant's circumstance to avoid their contractual obligations in which they selected the forum in advance. In addition to that, going to the venue argument itself, what they said is, if I heard correctly just a moment ago, they admit that the agreements, the distributor agreement and the associate agreement, contain a mandatory venue provision. They admit that. What they say is to go beyond that, look into the rules and regulations, and there is in there what they call a permissive venue provision. Thus, if you have a mandatory and you have a permissive, then the permissive must control, and then that would allow Illinois or perhaps some other court to be a court of proper venue. What they completely ignore, counsel ignores over and over again, and ignored it in his argument a moment ago, the distinction between consent to jurisdiction and venue concepts. You can have a consent to jurisdiction provision which is permissive. For example, in Saxena, in one of the cases that he cites, and many other cases, you could have a party agreeing to waive any objection to venue in a particular jurisdiction. That may or may not establish that jurisdiction as a mandatory place of venue. What it just says is, if a party hails you into court in Illinois or Ohio or wherever else, you're not going to object to jurisdiction. You've submitted yourself to the jurisdiction of the court, even though you may be subject to the jurisdiction of numerous other courts. So what the courts look to, and they distinguish very clearly between these consent to jurisdiction cases and these venue cases, and they look to the agreement.
Why do you put both of them in an agreement, or have the regulations or rules of the wellness include that? Seems like it just gums everything up.
Well, it would be, I would say, it's a little bit of belts and suspenders, and then there's just a slight bit of sloppy drafting. First of all, it's certainly belts and suspenders to make very clear that the parties are subjecting themselves to the personal jurisdiction of the court, and in the rules and regulations, it even goes a step further, and there is a particular waiver of objection to even a convenient forum type argument.
Isn't that always just covered in a forum selection clause? If two parties have a contract, and the contract provides that any disputes will be resolved in Colorado, that's the end of the ballgame. You don't need to say anything more.
I think if you had just in and of itself a venue selection clause at that, you would certainly have a hard time arguing you haven't also subjected yourself to the jurisdiction of the particular court you've done venue. However, there are numerous cases with both, and in fact, the CIT Group Lott case, which we've cited, has the exact kind of situation we have here. They have a consent to jurisdiction provision, and they have a venue provision, and the court analyzed that and held that that was fine. It had the parties consenting to the non-jurisdiction of the state and federal courts in the office of the lender, and then they had a forum selection provision in which the litigation would only occur in the federal or state court of the office of the lender. So it had both, and the court, it's not an uncommon situation, even though it probably is belts and suspenders. And in fact, when you read the distributor agreement and the rules and regulations, they harmonize together quite nicely. In fact, the distributor agreement talks about any dispute shall occur in a court of competent jurisdiction as set forth in the rules and regulations, and then you look over to the rules and regulations and you see the consent to jurisdiction provision. It makes extremely clear the word shall with regard to venue is stated in both the distributor agreement and the associate agreement, all of which were signed by all the respective appellants. The position seems to be, if you take their argument, appellate's argument, at full value, that if you have a mandatory indication and a permissive indication, that somehow mandatory and permissive equals permissive. That's not what the courts do. What the courts look to is they're going to perhaps presume, unless it's made clear, that it's permissive. But the court is going to look to, in analyzing the agreements, whether or not there's any language indicating that the parties have committed themselves to the exclusive jurisdiction in a particular place. There is nothing inconsistent or in conflict by saying, for example, a suit may be brought in Dallas, and then saying the suit shall be brought in Dallas. There's nothing inconsistent with that at all. The other provision makes clear, one provision makes clear this is a proper place to do it, and the other provision makes clear that this is the place to do it. As counsel admitted a moment ago, it is clear, and they admit that there is a mandatory venue provision in the agreement signed by the appellants. but they're trying to set up this this conflict argument, which is completely impermissible and unsupported by the position of the parties. As I said, the appellants may be subject to jurisdiction elsewhere beyond just the state of Texas, or beyond Dallas, Texas. However, we don't have to get to that, and it's irrelevant in that regard because they've submitted themselves to the exclusive venue of Dallas. So even though jurisdiction may properly lay here in the Illinois courts, certainly, and perhaps other places that they may reside or have transacted business, it's clear from the mandatory language of the agreements that venue lies only in Dallas. The Saxena case, which counsel has cited and referred to, merely has a consent to jurisdiction provision. It says it operated to, quote, prevent the plaintiff from objecting to venue and personal jurisdiction in Ohio. And what they were doing there, they wanted to make clear that the agreement of the parties was they could be hailed into court in Ohio, but that did not, there was no exclusivity language, there was no requirement that that be the exclusive place that they be hailed into court. And so when they were brought in somewhere else, or attempted to brought in somewhere else, then that was found to be perfectly fine. The attempt to distinguish the CIT lot case, which I quoted a moment ago, a counsel has a very hard time getting around that. And what he says the distinguishing factor, the decisive factual difference, to use his briefing, was the fact that it was the plaintiff and not the defendant seeking to do the enforcement. However, Saxena didn't mention lot, didn't attempt to distinguish it in any way, nor was there any weight put in that case or in any other case that I've ever seen in who is the party seeking to enforce the agreement of the parties. The agreement of the parties with regard to jurisdiction and venue can be certainly enforced by either party, and it does not make any difference in that case whether it was enforced by one or the other. The other cases, couple of other cases counsel cited just a moment ago, in Rivera and in Sentira v. Long, he indicated that I would certainly be raising these things or trying to distinguish them, and he stated that they are venue provisions. They were not. They were not form selection clauses, and in fact, in Riviera, it says a true form selection clause, and it goes on from there to talk about it, would make clear and have certain language. These are consent to jurisdiction provisions. They are not the form selection venue provisions in the nature that we have here in the present case. In Riviera, the question was whether the defendants had waived a right to move for a 1404A transfer when all they had was a consent to jurisdiction provision. That is not the issue in the case, and thus that case is completely irrelevant in this case. In Sotira v. Long, they did not have a foreign selection provision. They only had a choice of law provision. And in that case, they found that the contract violated Illinois public policy due to the compensation being granted for recruitment. But what was important in that case is it was evidence that had come in through a summary judgment hearing, and after that, and after that extensive discovery and summary judgment procedure and brief, and then and only in, then did the court find that there was something illegal under Illinois public policy in connection with the actions of the parties. And that brings us back full circle to where we were at the beginning of the argument and as counsel, as Your Honor raised with counsel. So where do we go and what do we do? What we would do if we accept the appellant's argument is all someone has to do out is throw a allegation of fraud, which, as Your Honors know, is not accepted as true, as these are considered to be 12B3 type motions. And then all they have to throw in is the additional language, I just need to dig a little bit deeper. And then now we have a trial in the state of Illinois, which, of course, would our summary judgment, which would, of course, be rendered moot and a complete waste of time if and when the court finds, as they would certainly in almost every circumstance, that it's not illegal. Then we have to shoot the whole thing down to Dallas and start back over. They're in Dallas right now. Dallas is the proper forum. That's the contracted for place to do it. The Dallas courts are ready, willing, and able to take their case and to provide them the justice that they contend that they're allowed.
Probably willing is an overstatement.
Well, we're at least willing to litigate it down there, and hopefully the courts are willing from everything that I've seen. Okay. Any other questions from Your Honors, or I will...
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Saluti? Letty, excuse me.
Setting aside the fact that it's our belief that this is an illegal pyramid scheme and the contract should be void, counsel doesn't explain why in the rules and regulations there is a need for three consent to personal jurisdiction clauses. The plaintiffs, this is a contract of adhesion. The plaintiffs can't be expected to divine from the defendant's rules that provision entitled venue.
Why is this a contract of adhesion?
Why?
Yeah.
It's the defendant's contract. I thought the contract of adhesion. It's not
is
bargained
where you
for.
You have no choice. You buy a ticket on an airplane or something, and they have back of the ticket, it says you have to litigate any disputes.
This wasn't bargained for in any way. This was not an arm's length negotiation.
Parties spending a lot of money here. Enter into it.
They did spend a lot of money.
Sure.
And there's a provision that says venue is non-exclusive to Texas. And I see that I'm out of time.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Cerletti. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.